Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. It is Monday. It is 101.3 ESPN. 101.3ESPN.com. Always streaming free on your 101.3 ESPN app and now on your Amazon Echo. If you don't have the app, you should go and download it. It's free. It's in the Google Play Store. It's in the Apple Store as well. Access to all of our podcasts, access to our exclusive web content. All of our interview clips are there as well. Scores, news notes, anything you want is on our 101.3 ESPN app. And again, if you are using that Amazon Echo or that Echo Dot device, just say enable 101.3 ESPN. You do that the first time you listen on that device, then you just have to say open 101.3 ESPN, and there we are. So we appreciate you however you are ingesting our shows, however you are taking in our content. You can do that all day long. Full show today. It's been a while since we've been able to say that, going up until 7 o'clock. Red Sox on an off day. They get ready for a three-game set in Tampa as they continue to play what seems to be only the Orioles and Rays in the early part of the baseball season's first 2 months. We go up until 7 o'clock. Remember, coming up this week, we'll be out at Burger Bar in Colchester tomorrow, 7:30 to 9:30. You can find us there, half-price appetizers, also drink specials as well, including just $3 Blue Moon. So we have a ton of fun there every week. It's been a great time. We'll be watching all the games. We'll be watching Red Sox and Rays. We're watching the Yankees as well. We've always got them on, too. So fun day to come on and hang out with us. As for what's coming up today, we'll get into another key for Cavs-Celtics. Batting practice at 6:20. We haven't played batting practice in a while because we've had so many short shows because of the Red Sox season. But batting practice, the best sound bites in sports, that comes up at 6:20. We'll get into some Giants news and notes, some thoughts on the Red Sox, Jackie Bradley Jr. But first, don't let people tell you otherwise. Tom Brady not being at day one of OTAs is a big deal. And here is why. In 2013, Tom Brady told the public that he thinks OTAs are a big deal. So that first and foremost, I am to believe that this is an important thing. I know it's voluntary. I'm not saying that Tom Brady's going to get fined. This doesn't cost him monetarily. But this is a big deal. Two things can both be true. One, it is voluntary. He will not lose money or his roster spot for not being at OTAs day one. But it can also be true simultaneously that it's important. And if you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. 2013, Tom Brady tells you that OTAs are a chance to set a ground for a successful training camp. And a successful training camp leads you to a successful start of the regular season. And a successful start of the regular season leads you to a start of a successful second half of the season. And that leads you to a start of a successful playoff run. Tom Brady has told you that he values OTAs, that he thinks they are important. They are important to, you know, in some cases, learn the playbook, in some cases, to gain familiarity with newly signed players, of which the Patriots have some. Jeremy Hill at running back. Newly signed player Jordan Matthews at wide receiver. Cordarrelle Patterson at wide receiver. Troy Nicholas at tight end. A chance to gain familiarity with players that are coming back from injury, i.e. Julian Edelman, somebody who he hasn't thrown a meaningful pass to since August of last season. A chance to work with rookies that you have brought in, i.e. your first-round pick in Sony Michel, the running back out of Georgia, i.e. one of your late-round picks, Braxton Berrios, wide receiver out of Miami, a guy who many people think has a chance to make this team. I don't know where I see it right now, but Mel Kiper said he thinks he's one of the top chances to make an impact of late-round draft picks. He would know better than I about how good this guy can be and if he's got a chance to make it in the Patriots roster and make it in their system. Tom Brady not being there to work with those guys and gain cohesion with those guys, it's a big deal. I don't believe, of course I don't believe that just because Tom Brady didn't show up to OTAs, whether it's one day or all 5 days, you know, or the entire week, Tom Brady's not going to have forgotten how to throw a football. And I believe fully that when Tom, you know, when mandatory minicamp comes into play, which is the next thing, that Tom Brady will be in shape and ready to play. I believe that. Of course I do. He's never given me any inclination to believe that he doesn't value preparation. But the reps that he's not able to get now with Sony Michel, the reps that he's not able to get now with Braxton Berrios, with Jordan Matthews, that you can't repeat these opportunities. They don't exist again. This is the first and only chance so far of the offseason program to do 7-on-7 drills, to do 11-on-11 drills. And if you don't think that it's important for Tom Brady to be there, then, I mean, just listen to Saquon Barkley. We're going to talk about the Giants later. But Saquon Barkley, Giants rookie running back, drafted number 2 overall in the NFL draft this year, he thinks it's valuable to have his quarterback there. Listen to Saquon Barkley talk about Eli Manning today.
It's been amazing. Obviously, he's a great guy. He's a great quarterback. But he's so knowledgeable about the game. He knows every single, like, where you're supposed to be, like, where everyone's supposed to be, literally. Like, he can, like, look this way. And if this guy ran a wrong route, he knows that guy already ran a wrong route. So I continue to just learn from him every single day and ask a lot of questions. I think I'm probably annoying to him a little bit, but I continue to ask him a lot of questions. And, you know, I just want to try to expand on my knowledge of the game because that's going to make me a better player. And if I can continue to grow as a better player, then I continue to help the team.
That's Saquon Barkley, Giants running back, talking about how valuable it is having Eli Manning there with him during the OTA process, during the offseason process. Sony Michel is not getting that opportunity. Number 31 pick in the draft, a guy who's supposed to be an explosive player for you, doesn't have the Hall of Fame quarterback there to bounce questions off of, to have Tom Brady telling him when somebody ran a wrong route or when somebody missed a pass protection, somebody messed up in blitz pickup. That those are reps, there you can't deny it. They're reps that aren't being taken right now. It's familiarity that isn't being had right now. And if I'm players on the Patriots, I don't resent Brady for not being there. But if I'm a guy who is missing out on an opportunity to get better and a guy who is missing out on an opportunity to make a roster because I don't have Tom Brady there, then that's disappointing to me. If Cordarrelle Patterson or Jordan Matthews or Jeremy Hill or anybody get cut from this team because they're not lined up with Tom Brady come training camp, I'm going to be disappointed that I missed out on opportunities to work with him prior to that. Now, his old teammates, Matt Chatham works for Nesson, offensive lineman. He has been so staunch in his support of everything the Patriots do and so critical of everything the mainstream media says about New England. Even he acknowledged to Mike Reese of ESPN, he said that, look, it hasn't bothered me that he hasn't been there to this point. But if he doesn't show up on Monday, meaning today, well, then that's the first time it becomes a big deal to me. So let's reset. Tom Brady has told you that OTAs are valuable, and he chose not to show up. You have heard from a rookie on another NFL team how important it is to have his probable Hall of Fame quarterback there, and Tom Brady's not there to do the same and have the same impact on Patriot players. You've heard his former teammates say, it didn't bother me to this point, but now is where I start to really take notice of his absence. And then, don't forget this too. If Jimmy Garoppolo was there, if Tom Brady was threatened in any way, he'd be there. You know that. For a guy who's a little bit insecure, for a guy who didn't want to help along his backup, if he was there and sensed a threat from Jimmy G, Tom Brady would be there. I absolutely believe that he would. Now, since he sees no threat, he sees no ramifications. We get a text on the Town Fair Tire text line asking me, Brady, do you think this is a power move by Tom Brady? No, I don't think it's a power move. I do believe that he sees no threat at the quarterback position. He sees nobody there, and Brian Hoyer, Danny Etling, or Austin Apodaca, who they worked out on Friday, he sees nobody there that can have any chance at jostling his spot as a starter. So he is following through on what he said. Since I feel no threat, I will use this time to be with my family. And that is his choice. But his choice does have ramifications. If he had gone to OTAs, he might have ramifications of that choice at home in his home life. Now, he has his choice was to stay at home, and the ramifications come in his professional life for his team and for his teammates. So it is a big deal. Do not let people tell you that it isn't. Other people aren't buying that too much. Mike Golic was on Golic and Wingo today, and he was talking with Trey Wingo about it, and this is what he had to say.
Understand, this isn't, you know, everybody feeling hunky-dory about one another. We know there's some friction to this, and especially with Tom and his trainer and how the trainer guy
Alex
has been
Guerrero,
treated.
TB12.
You know, with that, how that separation has happened. So Tom kind of choosing a side here now in the training. But as I said, when Tom is supposed to be there, Tom is going to be there. Gronk said he's going to play. So when Gronk is supposed to be there, he's going to be there.
They'll be there. That's not what this is about. When I believe that when mandatory minicamp starts, they will be there. I believe that when training camp starts, they will be there. Contract situations resolved, not resolved, issues with Belichick resolved, not resolved, whatever, they will be there. That's not what this is about. It is about today. And today, if I'm Sony Michel, Jeremy Hill, Cordero Patterson, anybody else this team has brought in, I'm disappointed that I'm missing out on a chance to get better because the starting quarterback is not there. It's a red flag. It is a red flag that Tom Brady's not there. Again, this is another situation where two things can be true at once. It can be a big deal today, and we can look back on it on January 1st and say, okay, the team went 12-4. I guess it didn't matter that much. That's very true. I am not saying that Tom Brady not being there today is the end of the Patriots, but Patriot fans need to acknowledge that it can be a big deal without it undoing everything the team is set out to do this year. They can still win the AFC East, and they can still win the AFC, and they can still get to the Super Bowl. It can also still be a big deal that Tom Brady is not there. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, the app and the Amazon Echo. So when you're watching the Celtics today, you need to recognize this. It's about LeBron James, and it's always about LeBron James in a way, but it's truly tonight, again, about how LeBron James plays and what style of game he comes out looking to play. Game two, LeBron came out and he dominated the first quarter and he shot 29 times and he became a ball-centric player. And they got nothing from anybody else. J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, they were given nothing by those role players. LeBron played well when it came to scoring, but nothing else was done around him. Fast forward to game three, the Cavaliers found the formula to win. LeBron James getting the ball moving, getting the defense moving, getting his teammates in motion, and finding open shots. 17 three-pointers for the Cavaliers in Game 3. Listen to this. The Cavaliers moved the ball at a much higher rate in Game 3. They made 280 passes in that game, the most they made in a postseason. 280 passes in the game, most they've made in a postseason. It was the first time in six matchups against the Celtics in which Cleveland outpassed Boston. What does that mean? That reminds me so much of two things specifically. Last year when Isaiah Thomas got hurt, what did the Celtics have? When Isaiah Thomas got hurt in the playoffs, the Celtics went from a ball-dominant player who could get you 30 at will, and last year IT could. They went from a ball-dominant player who could get you 30 at will to a team full of just guys. They didn't have the guy, but they had guys. And they moved the ball around at a much higher rate. I remember over 300 passes in the first game that the Celtics beat the Cavaliers last season in the playoffs without IT. They moved the ball around. They created more and more open shots and more defensive uncertainty. Same thing this year. Game one, Milwaukee, Celtics moved the ball around at a huge rate, and they went through. That's where we first saw Terry Rozier play well because we saw the ball movement the Celtics had. The shots created by the Cavaliers when they utilized that ball movement, that was the difference in the game. 17 three-pointers doesn't happen because 17 threes were hit with a hand in their face. 17 three-pointers happens because LeBron James in particular was willing to move the ball, willing to sacrifice his shot total to do it, and willing to create not only more shots, but more open shots for his teammates. The Cavaliers outside of LeBron cannot play one-on-one ball. In the same way that last year, Isaiah Thomas gets taken off that Celtic team, there was no one-on-one players. The Cavaliers outside of LeBron don't have one-on-one players, okay? And I can prove it to you. Outside of LeBron James, Cavalier players made 30% of pull-up shots and 40% of their shots driving to the basket. Okay? They can't create. J.R. Smith is not a shot creator. Kyle Korver is not a shot creator. They are shot recipients. When the ball gets moving and open shots get created, they can knock them down because they're good, pure shooters. They are not dribble, drive, create guys on their own. They're just not. That is the way that this team is, okay? They are good shooters when they are open. And in order to get open, LeBron James had to make a conscious effort to not be as ball dominant and not try to score as much as he had done in game number two. That was the difference. So when you're watching the game tonight, and we've got it for you on the radio, if you're listening there, 8 o'clock on AM 960 The Zone. If you're watching it at home, then understand that if you're seeing a Cavs team that's moving the ball well, chances are they're going to be playing well. Okay? The increase in passing led the Cavaliers 29 uncontested shots. They averaged 21.5 in the first two games. They were getting 7.5 more uncontested shots in game three than in the average of the first two games. Ball movement is key, and it starts with what kind of game LeBron James wants to play. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. Another text comes in. Could Belichick undo some of this damage by allowing Alex Guerrero back into the locker room and back around the stadium? He probably could mitigate some of the disaster in the relationship between him and Brady, but I don't think that it ultimately would be good. Belichick has stuck his line in the sand, and now he's got to stay with it because the Patriot way has been about consistency, and it's been about sticking to a mantra and getting guys to buy into that, and everybody falls in line. If Belichick starts showing he can be pushed around, then that is not the best thing for the Patriots. All right, when we come back on the other side of the break, it feels good to say this. Batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what? And what's going on? It's all next. CBGN 101.3.
It's a Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, and you can be part of the show by texting in at 802-655-6672. So join the conversation now on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back inside Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com, the app and the Amazon Echo as well. Going up until 7 o'clock, a full show tonight. NHL playoff action on these airwaves, 7:45, Game 6 between Tampa Bay and Washington. Tampa looking to close out Washington and go to the Stanley Cup Finals against Vegas. Unbelievable story on Vegas. And if you want to get in on that, you can on the Town Fair Tire text line. 802-655-6672. I am not a hockey purist. It's not that I'm not a hockey fan. I'm growing into becoming a hockey fan. So I don't have a real opinion on Vegas. I think it's a great story. It doesn't bother me that they're playing so well early. I'm not mesmerized that they're playing so well early. I think it is a good story. I enjoy the tale of it. I enjoy the human interest part of it, especially given the tragedy, the Las Vegas shooting that happened, not that long before the NHL regular season happened, the idea of a community bonding together in the face of adversity and doing something historic, that appeals to me also. I understand the idea that hockey fans that have been following hockey since the original six days might not like the idea of an expansion team being so good. It's been 226 days since Vegas played their first regular season game, and now they're going to the Stanley Cup Final. It's been 18,646 days since the Maple Leafs played a game in the Stanley Cup Final, May 2nd, 1967. Okay, 18,000 days plus since the Leafs played in the Stanley Cup. 17,500 since the Blues played in the Stanley Cup. 12,000 plus since the Islanders did. 9,000 plus since the Canadiens did. I understand hockey fans that don't want to see an expansion team do well, but I also understand people who are fixated on the story. So if you have an opinion, 802-655-6672. Celtics-Cavs game 4 on AM 960 The Zone. But now, we have been waiting a while to say this. The best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what? What's going on? Batting practice.
Champlain Valley game night. Batting practice.
We do this when we have a full show, and we haven't had a full show in a while, so here we go. Best sound bites in sports. Mike Golic Jr., he was on Golic and Wingo, as he is every day. You can hear that at 6 a.m. on these airwaves as well. He talked more about Tom Brady, more about Rob Gronkowski not being at day one of the offseason program and maybe subsequent workouts.
And the one thing these guys are is professional.
Yep.
They understand, and you better understand, and they do understand, if you walk into that locker room, you are going to do it Bill Belichick's way.
Yes.
So if you make that decision to check in, you get all the time you want now to decide whether you want to be there while it's voluntary, but they're going to play. So when they walk in, the goal is to win the Super Bowl. That takes priority over everything. You may not like the way he's doing it, or he's doing it, or he's doing it, but these guys have prepared and won championships together, and that will be the focus.
Yeah, I agree with Golic. We can talk all about the controversy that exists in the Patriots locker room, that exists in the Patriots hierarchy. We can talk all about that. But the minute that Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady decide to show up, they are falling in line with the Patriot way, and they are falling in line with the Belichickian way of doing things. And they may not have loved it last year, but if they show up willingly, they are signing up for that kind of treatment and that kind of situation again. So we had a texter in the last segment that says, hey, shouldn't the Patriots just welcome Guerrero in and be done with it? Well, no. Because Belichick knows that ultimately, if they want to play, they're going to have to do things the way that he wants to do things. So he doesn't need to acquiesce to the players. The players, by coming, are acquiescing to him. One more NFL news and notes, just because it's outrageous. How about Terrell Owens, T.O., talking about coming back to the NFL? I mean, T.O. is 44 years old. He was talking on The Odd Couple, which is a ESPN, which is a podcast, and this is what he had to say about the idea of coming back at age 44.
I'm not actively seeking to get back in, but if the opportunity arises because of someone that knows me personally, outside of all the other shenanigans that, you know, people may bring up as to why they wouldn't bring me in, I know that I could, you know, go into a roster and help a team in certain situations. You think about the red zone. You mentioned Atlanta Falcons. You think about what Julio Jones and somebody, a team like that could benefit with somebody like me on the football field at the same time.
Look, T.O. is one of the best to ever do it. I don't think that T.O. has any place in the NFL right now at age 44. He can think that way if he wants. I have no doubt that he's probably in great shape. We all remember doing sit-ups on the front lawn. But, you know, that just sounds like T.O. looking to stay a little relevant to me, especially, you know, look, he's about to get in the Hall of Fame. Do you really want to go back and play, T.O., and cost yourself even more time of getting in the Hall of Fame, wait another 5 years? I don't think so. NBA action tonight, the Cavaliers and Celtics going at it, as we've talked about. Well, the Celtics, they were talking about what it might take to win tonight, and they were talking about the wake-up call that really was Saturday night. Here's Jaylen Brown talking about himself personally.
I use it as fuel. I thought it was embarrassing. I thought we came out the way I played, the way I performed, how not aggressive I was in the first half. I look at that as, you know, fuel to come out in game 3 and be excited about it and be ready to play, ready to fight.
Terry Rozier, he went on to say the same type of thing, talking about using it as motivation, talking about the Celtics willingness and necessary, you know, how necessary it is to kind of reboot tonight. Talked about what it was like, you know, it was a wake-up call that was needed on Saturday.
I'm gonna look over the film, go back, see the
all the mistakes we made and how can we correct them for Monday. You know, we know it's not going to be easy Monday either, but, you know, we got to come out and play better. I feel like we needed this to get us ready for Monday.
Well, I don't think any team needs a 30-point loss, but sometimes you can rest on your laurels of success, and the team had such success in games 1 and 2. And also, I think it's easy to assume mentally that another, you know, you never assume you're going to sweep somebody. So at some point, then you've got to figure you're going to lose. And it felt like the Cavaliers came right out to send a message early, and the Celtics were just very willing participants in letting Cleveland just dictate the pace and do whatever they want. And, well, I don't think anybody needs a 30-point loss. The Celtics certainly did need a reminder that, well, it's still LeBron James. He's still one of the best three players ever, so I don't get sucked into that debate about if he's the best ever. He's one of the top three players in the history of the game. I think the Celtics come out today and play much better, but ultimately tonight, I think the Cavaliers are going to win. I still think the Celtics win this series, though. Marcus Morris was a guy who had a lot of success in games 1 and 2, especially guarding LeBron James. Well, he didn't have that same success in game number 3. This was his brutally honest assessment of his own performance.
Personally, I think I did a job defensively against LeBron. I don't think, you know, he was just too comfortable when I was guarding him. I made myself very vulnerable on screens, and I just wasn't disciplined, man. And, you know, we can't happen in a game of this magnitude, and it showed, you know, and he did a great job of exposing that. And, you know, personally, I think I have to be better.
I think 11 points is all LeBron had scored in the first two games on Marcus Morris. I'm pretty sure he had 12 in game number 3. Now, you're not going – this goes back to what we just talked about in the last segment. When LeBron James is willing to – back you down, play ISO, and settle for a fadeaway 18-footer, you've won that. He might make it, but you've won that battle. You have forced him into as tough a shot as there is in the game. A fadeaway 18-footer falling towards the corner. You've won that. Well, when the ball gets swung around the perimeter and the ball goes inside to Kevin Love and then gets kicked out to a slasher who then finds a, you know, you're helping and he kicks out to the corner, those shots become easy for LeBron James and everybody else in basketball. That's what the Cavaliers are going to want to do again tonight. So you can't put it all on Marcus Morris, but I can say that in games 1 and 2, LeBron was much more willing to play that settling game. He only took 3 threes in game number three, and he was 3 for 3 on them. He wasn't willing to settle. He attacked the basket, kicked out. And as a result, people were able to attack the basket and kick back out to him also. And shots just get easier. 29% or 29 open shots uncontested for the Cavs on Saturday night. An average of 21.5 for the first two games. There's a difference there, and it all stems from style of play. Tyronn Lue said, it wasn't just about LeBron on offense. How about LeBron on defense too? That's where, correctly as he notes, that's where there was a big change as well.
Biggest thing is the multiple effort, making a second effort. And we made some mistakes defensively, but we covered for one another last night. We really continue to keep moving. And I thought last night was LeBron's best game I've seen in a long time as far as helping, closing out to Jaylen Brown's chest, making him put it on the floor, closing out to Morris, closing out to Smart. So he did a really good job of just setting the tone of multiple efforts. So it was good for us.
I mean, players were 2 of 10 against LeBron when LeBron was the primary defender on Saturday night. It shows you that he valued defense more in game 3 than he did in games 1 and 2. That's just a fact, okay? He held opponents to 0.36 points per play, his best of the postseason. He created 4 turnovers, his second best of the postseason. He contested 80% of the shots against him in game 3, his highest contest percentage of the postseason. I mean, all of that adds up. It's not that LeBron probably didn't want to play defense in games 1 and 2. But when you are so taxed by having to score so much in your own mind, it's not physically possible to play defense at that level. But when you're willing to step back, trust your teammates more, and change up your style of play, then you can expel a bigger effort on the defensive end too. That all adds up, and it's all part of the story as to why Game 3 was a 30-point win for the Cavaliers. Let's go to baseball real quick. We talked about him on Friday. The most interesting man in baseball to me is Sonny Gray. Good for him. He pitched well this weekend. I know the Royals aren't very good, but if I'm not going to qualify Red Sox wins over Baltimore, you know, as saying the Orioles aren't very good and I'm going to praise David Price, well, then I'm going to praise Sonny Gray too. Here was Aaron Boone talking about his pitcher.
I thought his stuff was great, and the slider I thought was a really good pitch for him. And he was on the attack all day. I think having an extended time off, you're never sure how sharp you'll be when they come out. But I think he had some good work on the sides, getting ready for this, and he was electric today. He was on the attack, and I thought the slider was a great pitch for him.
8 innings, 4 hits. The music's just about over. I got one more clip after this, but 8 innings, 4 hits, only 1 run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. That's what I like the best. Those last two numbers right there. 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Sonny Gray, we've told you this. For most of this season, he was trending towards the highest walk rate of his career and the highest strikeout rate of his career. And that leads me to believe that he's a guy who doesn't trust his pure stuff and he's trying to be too fine. And yes, he may get you to miss it and get those strikeouts, but he may also miss with it, get behind in counts. I mean, Sonny Gray, I think, has like a 160-point difference between being up in the count and being down in the count. People are hitting like 280 against him or something when he's behind in the count. Maybe it's even more. It's over 300 when he's behind in the count. I think it's the biggest difference of any starter in baseball. I'd have to check that for sure, but I'm pretty sure that's the number I saw over the weekend. So he's ahead in the count, only 1 walk, only 5 strikeouts allowed him to go deeper in the game and get 8 innings. I mean, this year, Sonny Gray had not even gone 6 1/3 innings all season. He goes 8 yesterday against Kansas City. You have to like that. He also got 14 ground balls. He only threw 92 pitches. He only threw 92 pitches yesterday. Efficient, effective, good for Sonny Gray. As much as I don't like the Yankees, I don't like seeing pitchers struggle either. And I like seeing Sonny Gray, a guy who I think probably is in his own head quite a deal. I like seeing him play better as well. Alex Cora talked yesterday about the Red Sox offense.
I lived it last year, how important it is. There were a few games that we felt like we didn't have a chance. All of a sudden somebody hit a 2-run homer, somebody else did it, and all of a sudden you're back in the game. So it feels with us is the same way. That no matter what, where the score is, we're either going to add on or we have a chance to come back because we got guys that can hit it out of the ballpark.
Two words, J.D. Martinez. Two words, Mookie Betts. Both tied for the American League lead in homers with 15. This is a team that was last in the AL in home runs last year. This is a team that has real power this year. There's holes in this Red Sox offense. There are. Jackie Bradley Jr., when he plays, is a hole. Okay, he's been awful for the month of May. He's hitting under 090 for the month of May. The catchers have been dreadful. Rafael Devers, he homered the other day, but he's been iffy at times. There are issues with this Sox offense, but when you have the power that they have, Alex Cora is understandably excited about the potentials of his offense. All right, that'll do it for batting practice. When we come back, some notes on the Giants and their OTAs day one, and one sports media member who just needs to stop talking. That's next.
It's a Champlain Valley game night with Brady Farkas, and you can be part of the show by texting in at 802-655-6672. So join the conversation now on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, CBGN Champlain Valley game night on a Monday, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Celtics-Cavs, game 4, 8 o'clock tonight over on our sister station, AM 960 The Zone. Game 6 of the NHL's Eastern Conference Finals tonight, 7:45 here on 101.3 ESPN. Capitals looking to send it to game 7. Lightning looking to send themselves to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Vegas Golden Knights. We talk a lot today about the negative stories of OTAs with the Patriots, and now Brady and Gronk aren't there. How about the positives for the Giants? The Giants getting some real buy-in here early under Dave Gettleman, the GM, and Pat Shurmur. Odell Beckham Jr. was there. He played, he did some stuff with the team, some stuff off to the sides as well. He's not going to push it too much coming back from that broken ankle, but he was there. He was active. And for the last 2 months, Odell Beckham Jr. has been a positive storyline for the Giants. And that's necessary. Look, Odell Beckham Jr. wants a new contract. He wants a big contract. He wants one passing, you know, Mike Evans of the Buccaneers his $90-plus million deal. He wants a huge deal. So maybe he's acting on his best behavior because he wants money, and maybe he's turned over a new leaf, or maybe it's somewhere in between. But whatever their motivation is, it's good for the New York Giants. The Giants need 100% of Odell Beckham Jr.'s focus, attention, and skill set this year. Pat Shurmur is trying to turn around a team that went 3-13. He needs his best player invested. He needs his best offensive player invested. He needs his quarterback engaged and ready to bounce back in Eli Manning. And he needs his best player in Odell Beckham Jr. healthy and invested as well. He needs him to play well. He needs him to be a good role model for a guy like Saquon Barkley. He needs him to be a positive force in that locker room. If the New York Giants are going to re-sign Odell Beckham Jr. to the kind of deal that he covets, he needs to make sure he's acting like this plus more, plus playing well. If another team is going to swoop in and offer Odell Beckham Jr. the kind of deal that he covets, they need to see from afar the kind of good faith that Odell Beckham Jr. is building up. Look, again, I don't know that it's real. I don't know that it's not a 25-year-old guy who knows he needs to be on his best behavior to get that big money that he wants. But I don't care. Whatever his motivation is, this is what he's doing now. He's been present. He's been present for the entire phase of offseason workouts, most of which he skipped last season. He has done largely the right things. There was the, I understand the white substance in France and the woman in the bed and the pizza box. I understand that's not great optically, but I haven't heard anything about it, you know, since a week after it happened. So now I'm just going to write it off as nothing. And if it becomes something then later, then I'll deal with that then. But this offseason, he has largely been a good member of the organization. And that's all I can go on. And that's what the Giants need. They need Odell Beckham Jr. invested. Him, Sterling Shepard, Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Stewart, Eli Manning, Nate Solder. That right there has the makings of a competent offense. I don't know that the Giants are going 13-3, but I also think with that team, they're not going 3-13. And more kudos to the Giants. I have been hard on Ereck Flowers all offseason. I would trade him if another team wanted him. I'd trade him tomorrow. But, no, again, final year of his deal, whatever his motivation is, maybe he just wants to prove he's not a washout, and when the year ends, he can go get a job somewhere else. Fine. I don't care again. Do what you need to do this year to help the New York Giants be successful. He was present again after not showing up early in the offseason, and I hammered him for that. I'm going to give him credit today. He showed up. He was working after practice with Nate Solder, working on drills. Good for Nate Solder for being the new guy, for being the veteran, for being the Super Bowl champion, and for willing to work with the guy who had been seen as a malcontent and the guy who's upset that you displaced him in the at his position in the starting line, on the starting offensive line. Good for Solder being willing to do that. Good for Flowers willing to be helped. And then Eli Apple, too. Eli Apple spoke today about how last year was embarrassing for him, how he didn't want to be remembered as the player who was called a cancer on New York ESPN radio by Landon Collins, who's a well-respected all-pro player. Good for Pat Shurmur for wiping the slate clean with Eli Apple and Ereck Flowers and going in with no preconceived notions. Now, Ereck Flowers started off on the wrong foot, but maybe he's getting back in good graces after today. Eli Apple, according to Shurmur, has been nothing but a positive influence in that locker room since Shurmur got there. Good for the New York Giants. Again, I don't know that it translates to an NFC East championship this year in a playoff game at home, but I can tell you that it's that people buying in and people being willing to change has been a nice early season storyline for a new regime. The biggest part of a new regime is coming in and trying to change the culture and get guys to buy in, especially veterans who have done it their way for a handful of years, and especially at a high level. And Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr. have. Those guys have bought in to what these guys are selling, and now maybe the rest of the players, even the ones we were worried about, like Apple and Flowers, are starting to fall in line. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN. You can get in 802-655-6672. Another 5 minutes left. Look, it's not often that I want to hammer on other people in the business because we all say things, we all get things wrong, we all open ourselves up as targets, but Skip Bayless is a guy who is he's a regular on the, how do I phrase this? Skip Bayless is a guy that I don't mind going after. Skip Bayless talking today on Undisputed, Skip and Shannon's Undisputed today on Fox Sports 1, talking about the Celtics.
Your Celtics say after the game, that wasn't us. Yeah, it is. That's who you are. That's who you should be. And I got sick and tired over those 3 days of hearing commentator after commentator say, you know what? The Celtics are just better than Cavaliers. They're not better.
I believe from top to bottom. I believe
they are not.
Skip Bayless says the Cavaliers are better than the Celtics, that there's no way that he's tired of hearing that the Celtics were better than the Cavaliers. I go on Twitter every single day, and at least once a day when LeBron is playing, I see Skip Bayless trolling LeBron James. Whose side are you on, Skip? Are you on LeBron James' side all of a sudden? Because if you are, I better be reading tweets tonight about how LeBron is carrying the Cavaliers to victory if they're winning, and not how LeBron isn't as good as Jordan. I so don't care about that debate anymore, but you have shoved it down my throat on social media how LeBron is a choke artist and irrelevant and nowhere in Jordan's stratosphere, and now you're going to sit here and say that the Celtics, that you're tired of them and they're not as good as the Cavaliers? You can't play both sides. If you're going to be against LeBron, which is stupid, be against LeBron the whole way. Be against LeBron the whole way. Just own it. Continue to own it. You've owned it to this point, and now you're going to rip the Celtics. At this point, the Celtics are better than the Cavaliers in my estimation. They have a better head coach in Brad Stevens. They have a better collection of talent. They have better athleticism. They have more youth. They're more dynamic offensively, and they're better defensively. The only thing the Celtics don't have better than the Cavaliers is LeBron James, the guy that you can't stand, the guy that can't hold a candle to Jordan in your mind, the guy that you tweet, you know, asinine remarks about every night that he plays. I don't care if you don't like LeBron James. I think it's stupid. But now to sit here and say that the Celtics are not as good as the Cavaliers and not as good as LeBron, the same LeBron James that you trash every chance, that I just don't get. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. NHL action is coming up 50 minutes from now or so. 7:45, Lightning at Washington. Lightning looking to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. The Capitals looking to stave off elimination and go towards Game 7. Celtics, Cavs, 8 o'clock, 960 to Zone. We'll see you tomorrow.